When Christian saw that the man was wise in his own conceit, he whispered to Hopeful, "There is more hope for a fool than for him." And he added, "When he that is a fool walketh by the way, his wisdom faileth him, and he saith to every one that he is a fool." Shall we talk further with him, or go past him and let him think about what we have told him? Then we can wait for him later and see if we can gradually do him any good. Then Hopeful said, "Let ignorance a little while now muse on what is said, and let him not refuse good counsel to embrace, lest he remain still ignorant of what's the chiefest gain. God saith, those that no understanding have, although he made them, them he will not save." Hopeful said, "It is not good to tell him everything at once. Let us pass him by, and speak with him later, when he is able to bear it." So they both went on, and Ignorance followed behind. Now when they were a little ways past him, they entered a very dark lane, where they met a man whom seven devils had bound with seven strong cords, and were carrying back to the door they had seen on the side of the hill. Now good Christian began to tremble, and so did Hopeful. Yet as the devils led the man away, Christian looked to see if he knew him, and he thought it might be Turnaway, who lived in the town of Apostasy. But he did not see his face clearly, for the man hung his head like a thief who had been caught. But once they were past, Hopeful looked back at the man and saw a paper on his back with this inscription, "Wanton Professor and Damnable Apostate." Then Christian said to his companion, "Now I recall something I was told that happened to a good man around here. His name was Little Faith, but he was a good man, and he lived in the town of Sincere. What happened was this. At the entrance to this passage, a lane comes down from Broadway Gate called Dead Man's Lane, so called because of the murders that are commonly committed there. And this Little Faith, who was going on pilgrimage as we are, happened to sit down there and fall asleep. Just then, three rogues, three brothers named Faint Heart, Mistrust, and Guilt, came down the lane from Broadway Gate, and spying Little Faith, they came galloping up rapidly. Now the good man had just awakened from his sleep and was preparing to resume his journey when they came up to him and with threatening language ordered him to stand. At this, Little Faith turned as white as a sheet, and had neither the strength to fight nor to flee. Then said Faint Heart, 'Give us your purse,' but he did not do it, for he did not want to lose his money. So Mistrust ran up to the man and, thrusting his hand into his pocket, pulled out a bag of silver. 'Thieves! Thieves!' cried Little Faith. With that, Guilt struck him on the head with a large club and knocked him flat on the ground, where he lay bleeding like he would bleed to death. All this while the thieves stood by. But at last, hearing someone coming down the road and fearing that it might be Great Grace from the City of Good Confidence, they ran away, leaving this good man to shift for himself. After a while, Little Faith gained consciousness and managed to get to his feet and stumble along on his way." "But did they rob him all of that he had?" asked Hopeful. "No," said Christian. "They did not search him thoroughly enough to discover the place where he kept his jewels. So those he still had. But as I was told, the good man was troubled by his loss, for the thieves got most of his spending money. He had a little loose change left, but scarcely enough to take him to his journey's end. No, if I was not misinformed, he was forced to beg as he went, for he could not sell his jewels. But though he begged and did what he could, he went hungry for most of the rest of the way." "Isn't it a wonder, though," asked Hopeful, "that they did not get his certificate, which was to gain him admittance at the Celestial Gate?" "It is a wonder," said Christian, "but they missed it, though not through any cunning of his, for he was so dismayed when they attacked him that he had neither the power nor the skill to hide anything. So it was more by divine providence than by his own effort that they missed that good thing." "But it must have been comforting to him that they did not get his jewels," said Hopeful. "It might have been a great comfort to him, had he used it as he should," said Christian. "But those who told me the story said that he made little use of it all the rest of the way, because of the dismay he felt over losing his money. Indeed, he forgot it for most of the rest of his journey, and besides, when it did come to his mind, and he began to be comforted by the thought, then fresh memories of his loss would come upon him again and overwhelm him. "Alas, poor man," said Hopeful, "this must have been a great grief to him."
"Grief, yes, grief indeed," said Christian. "Would not any of us have been grieved by such treatment, to be robbed and wounded, and that in a strange place as he was? It is a wonder he did not die with grief, poor man. I was told that he complained bitterly almost all the rest of the way, telling all he met about how he was robbed and beaten, describing where it had happened, who had done it, what he had lost, and how he had barely escaped with his life. It's a wonder he didn't have to sell or pawn some of his jewels to support himself on the rest of his journey," said Hopeful.
Christian answered, "You talk like one who was just hatched. What could he pawn them for, or to whom could he sell them? His jewels were of no value in that country where he was robbed, nor did he want that kind of relief. Besides, had his jewels been missing at the gate of the Celestial City, he would have been excluded from an inheritance there, and that he knew very well. For him, that would have been worse than the appearance and villainy of 10,000 thieves."
"Why are you so sharp with me, my brother?" asked Hopeful. "Esau sold his birthright for a mess of pottage, and that birthright was his greatest jewel, and if he did, why might not Little Faith do so too?"
"Indeed, Esau did sell his birthright," said Christian, "and so have many others. And by doing so they exclude themselves from the chief blessing, as that vile coward did. But you must see the difference between Esau and Little Faith, and between their conditions. Esau's birthright was typical, but Little Faith's jewels were not. Esau's god was his belly, but Little Faith's was not. Esau was ruled by his fleshly appetite, but not so Little Faith. Besides, Esau could see no further than the fulfilling of his own lusts. 'For I am at the point to die,' said he, 'and what good will this birthright do me?' But Little Faith, though he had only a little faith, was kept from such extravagances by that faith, and made to see and value his jewels, so that he would not sell them as Esau did his birthright. You do not read anywhere that Esau had faith, no, not even a little. Therefore it is no wonder that he sold his birthright, and his very soul to the devil, for that is what happens when the flesh rules, as it will in men without faith to resist, for they are like the ass who cannot be restrained during her time of heat. When their minds are focused on their lusts, they will have them, whatever the cost. But Little Faith was of another temperament. His mind was set on things divine, and his existence depended upon things that were spiritual and from above. Therefore, what would he gain in selling his jewels had there been anyone who would have bought them and filling his mind with empty things? Will a man give a penny to fill his belly with hay? Or can you persuade the turtle dove to live upon carrion like the crow? Though faithless ones can pawn or mortgage or sell what they have, including their very souls, for carnal lusts, those who have faith, even though it be only a little, cannot do so. Here, therefore, my brother, is your mistake."
"I acknowledge it," said Hopeful. "But your severe reproach almost made me angry."
"Why," said Christian, "I only compared you to some of the young birds who dash about with a shell upon their heads. But ignore that, and consider the matter under discussion, and all shall be well between us."
"But, Christian," said Hopeful, "I'm convinced that these three fellows were just a bunch of cowards. Otherwise, do you think they would have run away as they did at the sound of someone coming down the road? Why wasn't Little Faith braver? I would think he could have handled at least one skirmish with them, and only yielded if there had been no other choice."
"Many have said they are cowards," said Christian, "but few have found it so in the time of trial.
As for a great heart, little faith had none. And from what you have said, my brother, if it had been you, you would have yielded after just one encounter. And since this is the height of your bravery, when they are at a distance from us, should they attack you as they did him, you might have second thoughts. But remember, they're only hired thieves who serve the king of the bottomless pit, who, if necessary, will come to their rescue himself, and his voice is like the roaring of a lion. I myself have been trapped as Little Faith was, and I found it a terrible thing. Those three villains attacked me, and when I began to resist like a Christian, they gave only one call for help, and in came their master. My life wouldn't have been worth a cent, as the saying goes, except that, as God would have it, I was clothed with armor of proof. And yet, even though I was so equipped, I found it hard work to acquit myself like a man. No man can tell what awaits us in that combat unless he has been in the battle himself. But they ran away, you see, said Hopeful, when they only imagined that great grace was coming their way. True, said Christian, both they and their master have often fled when great grace has appeared, and no wonder, for he is the king's champion. But I believe you will see some difference between Little Faith and the king's champion. All the king's subjects are not his champions, nor can they, when tried, accomplish such feats of war as he. Is it right to think that a little child should handle Goliath as David did, or that a wren should have the strength of an ox? Some are strong, some are weak. Some have great faith, some have little. This man was one of the weak, and therefore he was temporarily overcome. I wish it had been great grace for their sakes, said Hopeful. If it had been, said Christian, he might have had his hands full. But I must tell you that though great grace is excellent with his weapons, and can handle such fellows well enough as long as he keeps them at sword's point, yet if faint heart, mistrust, or the other get within him, they will eventually knock him down. And when a man is down, what can he do? Whoever looks carefully at great grace's face will see scars and cuts there that are evidence of what I say. Yes, once I heard that he said when he was in combat, we despaired even of life. These scoundrels made David groan, mourn and roar. Yes, and Heman and Hezekiah too, though champions in their day, were forced to fight when assaulted by these fellows and were beaten up by them. At one point, Peter went up against them. But of all the apostles, they handled him so skillfully that at last they made him afraid of a weak girl. Besides, their king is at their beck and call. He is never out of earshot. And if at any time they are getting the worst of it, he, if possible, comes in to help them, and of him it is said, the sword of him that layeth at him cannot hold, the spear, the dart, nor the breastplate. He esteemeth iron as straw, and brass as rotten wood. The arrow cannot make him flee, slingstones are turned with him into stubble, darts are counted as stubble, he laugheth at the shaking of a spear. What can a man do in this case? If a man could have Job's horse, and had skill and courage to ride him, he might do notable things, for his neck is clothed with thunder. He will not be afraid of the grasshopper. The glory of his nostrils is terrible. He paweth in the valley, rejoiceth in his strength, and goeth out to meet the armed men. He mocketh at fear, and is not affrighted, neither turneth back from the sword. The quiver rattleth against him, the glittering spear and the shield. He swalloweth the ground with fierceness and rage, neither believeth he, that is, the sound of the trumpet. He saith among the trumpets, Ha! Ha! And he smelleth the battle afar off, the thundering of the captains and the shoutings. But for such travellers as you and I, let us never desire to meet with an enemy, nor brag as if we could do better when we hear of others who have been defeated, nor be delighted by thoughts of our own bravery. For those who do usually come out the worst when they are tried.